This is the Dallas Morning News.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome into Sports Day Insider, presented by the Dallas Morning News. I am Kevin Sherrington, joined by my old pals David Moore and Evan Grant. David is in his kitchen. We've never seen his kitchen before. It is lovely, by the way.
Thank you so much. Understated, yet efficient.
Understated, but elegant. I'm going to have to make a confession here. You know, my wife is a realtor, and occasionally she calls upon me to write the little descriptions that go with her properties.
Did you clear that?
Yes, I'm well aware of all the lingo and how that all works. You got to be really concise, you know, and try to jam a lot of stuff into a very short description. So.
I thought you were going to say when you're remodeling the house, you would find rooms in other homes and invite you over to look at them so you can get decorating ideas.
But occasionally Debbie will say, hey, there's a, you should come see this house. It's really great. I got a friend of mine that's an architect as well. And he's going to have me come over for lunch, and he's going to show me a couple of the properties done. One over in Bluffview, which is my favorite part of Dallas. That's gorgeous over there.
Yeah, it is over there. It is.
Beautiful. So you can get in there and not even know where you are. You certainly don't know you're in Dallas. And some of those lots over there grew up for, $10 million just for the lot.
Nothing for a man of your means.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Maybe they'll let me walk across their lawn. All right. So we got a lot of stuff happening this week, fellas. We had the Mavericks square their series at 1-1. The Stars are down 0-1 and lost their home ice advantage. We've got the draft Thursday, and the Rangers are muddling through their start to this season. So we will start with those Rangers. So, Evan, it looks like that the Rangers are kind of figuring out their bullpen, but meanwhile, they're not hitting. What's up with that?
Sounds like a Saturday Night Live episode. I don't know, Kevin. I mean, I think that the theories are you've got Corey Seager, who's taken longer to find his swing after missing all of spring training. I think the absence of Josh Young is really significant, even though Josh Smith is hitting in his absence. I think they miss that power of Josh Young. You haven't gotten any production from a corner infield position at first base. Nate Lowe is just now getting started there. Got rid of Jared Walsh. Ezekiel Duran probably doesn't figure in that mix. And, you know, you've got two rookies. You've got two rookies going through what rookies go through, which is an adjustment period. And shame on me and shame on us. I probably created too high an expectation for Wyatt Langford. And Evan Carter, I blame him because he created the expectations himself with what he did last year. But both of these guys are going through typical rookie struggles. Carter's still struggling against left-handers, and Langford is still looking for his first home run, and said, you know, this weekend that he feels like his timing has been off from day one, which is all of that kind of runs contrary to what the Rangers had seen during spring training. This is a guy that the first week they asked to make one adjustment to his swing and then absolutely pulverized pitching for a month. And now he's struggling to get anything in terms of an extra base hit.
How much of Langford struggles do you think it's possible that maybe, you know, the problems he's had with umpires and the calls, I guess that statistic that he's gotten more balls, more strikes, more balls called strikes than anybody else in MLB.
He's got 18, well, at least 18 after last night being rung up on a ball outside the zone. I think there's two different schools of thought there. One is those aren't pitches that he can do anything with, so it makes no sense to swing. The second thought is I'm not so focused on the total number of called strikes as I am the two strike pitches. I think he struck out four times on pitches outside the zone. That's the one thing he's going to have to address, that he's going to have to be a little bit more willing to try and protect in those situations. On the other hand, Kevin, you know, we saw in his last strikeout last night, he did get down to two strikes, and he absolutely chased maybe the worst swing I've seen him take since he was up here, trying to do just that, trying to protect, trying to stay alive, because it was a two-strike count. So I think there's a little bit of a line that he's going to have to navigate to get to a point where he can get off swings that at least spoil some of those borderline pitches, at least until umpires give him the respect of saying this kid knows his strike zone pretty well. I don't know any other way around it.
Well, I just wonder how much of that is simply a matter of whatever the situation that he's thinking, you know, are they going to call this a strike or what? You know, I don't know if that's at least entering his head and just, you know, cluttering.
I don't think it's in. Enter his head, but I don't think it's entering his swing approach, because I don't think his discipline has been really, really good. You know, the pitches that are being called strikes are all down and away and outside the zone. And you look back at the pitch chart and he's right pretty much every time.
You know, the crazy thing about this for me, Evan, is that, and I don't want to get too carried away with Wyatt Langford, because that's not the Rangers' problem. I mean, he's one of them. They're just not hitting across the board. I mean, other than Adolis Garcia and Marcus Semien, everybody else is hitting far less than what they did last year. And it's been a real struggle for this team, you know, combined with the problems they've had keeping pitchers healthy, the problem they've had getting effective pitching. It is a small part of it, but it's a little bit to me like in the NBA, you know, when rookies don't get calls, that part of it is, I don't know, stupid, but fairly understandable. This to me is like, if this is some kind of thing about, I'm not going to give this rookie this call, how stupid is this for umpires in an era when you're about to have your ability to call balls and strikes taken away from you, and this kind of stuff only contributes to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy for me to point to that Langford has more called strikes that were actually balls, but I should point out too that until this weekend was Mookie Betts, a veteran who's as respected a hitter as there is in the league, who led in balls that were called strikes. So it's not necessarily just a rookie thing. And I think it's easy sometimes to glom on to, hey, it's a rookie, he's getting the old rookie treatment. I don't know that that's the absolute case. The one egregious, simply egregious incident was the Angel Hernandez at bat against Houston, in which each one of those pitches was further and further outside the zone. I certainly hope it's not some degree of hazing or a break-in period, because if it is, then that's yet another problem we've got with umpires to add on top of umpires throwing out managers for stuff that fans say this week. It's just not been a good first couple of weeks for umpires, and I don't have a good explanation for why Wyatt Langford has gotten so many called strikes on balls outside the zone, other than saying, hey, he hasn't established himself as a hitter yet, umpires aren't going to give him the benefit of the doubt. That's a stupid explanation, but it's all I've got.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know what else you say about it. It just seems bad. Everything else that you talked about as well is, you know, with Evan Carter and he has struggled, and it's just across the board. You know what, the thing that made that lineup so potent last year, there were no easy outs in it. You know, a pitcher he couldn't let up. Every guy that came up had the ability, you know, to most of them put the ball out of the park, and they're just not doing that. I just wonder how much of this is a little bit of a domino effect, too. I mean, when you start with Corey Seager, you know, he's hitting for average, but no,
well,
pop
he's 0
whatsoever.
For his last 14. He's not hitting for average all that much anymore.
Well, that's right. Yeah, it seems like everything now is a pop up.
It would be my average, but
yeah, everything's either a pop to left field or he rolls over on a ground ball to the right side.
Yeah,
and that's pretty much it.
And I listen. I tried to talk to him about it this weekend. He didn't really want to talk. Bruce Bochy is indicated that it's the swing is still kind of in spring training mode. And as I said to Corey the other day, listen, this is a guy who rebuilds his swing basically every game before a game. To not have those 6 weeks of at bats in spring training, or those 4 weeks worth of at bats in spring training, it's going to take some time. There's a counter to all of this too, though, right, Kevin? There's two sides to every story. We saw Corey Seager last year go on the IL twice. Once missed 2 months, came back after 3 days and absolutely lit it up. Once went on the IL for 10 days, came back without a rehab assignment, and just, you know, was as good a player as there was in the American League for the last 2 months. So I don't know exactly what's going on with Corey. He's not real introspective in terms of talking about his swing and what's happening. But I think you just described it. We're seeing an awful lot of pop-ups. And for me, the thing that's really stood out is that there's been a lot of soft outs on the ground to the right side.
Yeah, no question about that. Well, I mean, I figure that some of these guys will come out of it, because some of them are you know, all-stars, Seager being the most prominent example of that. And I don't think that's going to be an issue going forward. I did advance this theory, you know, potentially in the spring, that, you know, who knows that some of those guys, because they're so young, aren't just didn't have a career year, you know, last year. And that's certainly a possibility. And you're not going to get the same level that you did in 2023. So we'll see if that happens. I will say, let's kind of move over and talk about the pitching a little bit. It seems like the bullpen is starting to work itself out some. Kirby Yates has looked very impressive in the closer's role. You know, Jose Leclerc is still struggling, but I think he does look like a different pitcher when he's not in a high leverage situation. So that means at least he could be a valuable part of the bullpen. We saw John Gray get a little shot of relief work, just like he did last year in the playoffs. And I said then that I thought he would be a great reliever because of his pitch mix, and he's so much more aggressive when he's coming in relief. I know that's not what he wants to do, and I don't know that he would be happy doing that. He may not have any choice once some of these pitchers get back. What's your take on the bullpen situation?
Well, I think that, look, what they lacked at the beginning of last year was somebody who they could turn to and trust the ninth inning. And once you have that, it becomes a lot easier to build things. David Robertson and Kirby Yates, their two free agent offseason signings, are veterans at the back end of a bullpen. And when you put Yates and Robertson into the roles that they're in, or it's, chronologically speaking, pretty much become Robertson and Yates. This team is 7-1 in those games when they pitch together. Kirby had mentioned to me that his splitter has a little bit more bite on it this year than it's had, which of course led me to ask the question, did you talk with Nathan Eovaldi about it? And his answer was, I thought, pretty telling. He said, we talked a little bit in spring training. It wasn't much, but it was enough. And Nate could give a dissertation on the splitter, really on just about any pitch he throws. He's so intuitive and so instinctive. And what he had talked to Kirby about was that when he wants to get his splitter to really break down and into a right-hander, he makes sure that his wrist is kind of loose. And that clicked with Kirby. He realized that he had been gripping the ball in a little bit of a death grip with not just his fingers, but his wrists. And so what have we seen? We've seen a guy whose splitter is far more effective. And I think it just is a long way around of saying what an asset Nathan Eovaldi is to have for your pitching staff, both as a pitcher and as a teammate. He's invested. He's got good talking points. And it makes some sense. I think where the bullpen's at right now, with the fact that you've got those two guys at the back end, and then you can start to back everything up. You're going to get Josh Spores back this week. You got Jonathan Hernandez finally healthy, and it looks like he cut down his walks at the minor league level when he was there this year. And then you can't overlook what Jose Urania has done in the middle of the bullpen. Last night was a great effort from him, coming in after Dane Dunning had walked the two batters in the fifth inning, rolling a double play ball, and then rolling another double play ball in the sixth inning. He's had one rough outing, but they've turned to him a lot, and he's been really effective in that role. He looks like a smart signing. And yes, I think everybody is sitting here thinking, okay, the bullpen's starting to come together. Things are looking pretty good in the bullpen. But what happens when and if we get Scherzer, we get Tyler Mahle, we potentially get DeGrom? You are talking about guys like a healthy Cody Bradford and John Gray potentially moving to the bullpen where they were so effective last year in the postseason. And it does give them possibility of having a monster bullpen if they can keep everybody healthy.
Absolutely. All right, that's going to do it for this Rangers segment of our podcast. We're going to move over to the Cowboys and the draft. We're having our own little mock draft this morning. That was the assignment for this week's podcast is that we had to
every member on this podcast embraced that assignment.
Every one of us. Woo! We were all excited. The first three picks, three rounds, that's all we were doing. Somewhat because that's as far as we can think.
Plus that's about all the picks that Dallas really has.
The Cowboys
have. They didn't go 87 picks without a selection until.
Yeah, that's always good, isn't it? They got Trey Lance, though. Come on, David. They got Trey Lance for that fourth round pick.
They did. So
they're talking that up at the.
Of course, I could have had Justin Fields for a six if they would have waited a little bit. But that's interesting too. I know we're not going to talk about this class that much overall, but their discussion, very good chance that the first four players taken will all be quarterbacks. Five or six quarterbacks could go in the first round here. That draft that Trey Lance was in, he was the third pick in that draft. I believe of the five quarterbacks taken in the first round of that draft, four have been traded and are no longer with their original team. And that's before the first contract comes up. So the hit rate, again, I know a lot of teams are excited about quarterback going into this draft, but we have seen time and time again because of the value of the position, because it is so hard to find a player, quarterbacks are consistently overvalued in terms of where they're taken in the first round. Because again, teams just going, well, we know we won't be there when we're on the clock in the second. We got to move up. We got to take this guy here.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of taking him, let's go right to our own mock draft. The Sports Day Insider Mock Draft 1.0. It's a good thing we got this in before the actual draft on Thursday. So anyway, I'm going to go first, and then we'll go David and then Evan. And so it is not the 24th pick. I'm going to say the Cowboys trade down three picks, picking up a fourth rounder that they lost in the trade for Trey Lance. And I'm going to say they're taking Amarius Mims, tackle, Georgia. Huge, 6'7", 6'8".
Mammoth.
Supposedly the biggest wingspan in the draft. A little bit of a problem. I've got a little problem with this pick already. I'm criticizing my own pick.
Your own pick. You're already questioning what in the world you were thinking and doing this.
That's right. He's missed a lot of starts. He's been hurt. He even got hurt running the 40 for scouts. And I'm not saying he pulled a hammy, but he apparently pulled up anyway. So I do have questions about this. The whole reason why I'm taking him is that because I think because of these concerns, he will drop down to the bottom of the first round. And they unquestionably, in my mind, have to take an offensive lineman. They don't have to take Mims. They could go other directions. But I think he will be the best quality toward the bottom of the first round. So that's my
pick. May I say, if I'm an owner of, like, say, big tobacco or big pharma or whatever, I'm not sure I want you lobbying for me in Congress. I don't know.
Really?
I don't know that that was a full-throated pedal to the metal endorsement of Mims.
Yeah, well, I'm not
Mims
finished.
Mims is a player that's going to go in that range, and he's very
intriguing. Let me just say this. I'm not finished with that kind of thinking either. So we'll get to that in a minute. But David, who's your first-round pick, David?
Well, Mims will be in that area. He was one of the players that came in for a 30 visit, definitely on the Cowboys' radar. No, I take that back. They talked to him. He didn't come in for the 30 visit, but I know there is interest in him. You know, Guyton's another guy who potentially is going to go in that range.
TCU in Oklahoma.
Yep. Arguably, there's some debate on who's the best center in the draft, but there are a couple of good ones. And Graham Barton, who's actually played from Duke's, actually played every spot along the offensive line. Most seem to project him as a guard or center on the next level. I think they would love to take Graham Barton. I would say that's the pick, but I believe he's going to go just before the Cowboys are on the clock. So if that is the scenario, then you're sitting there and you have a chance, I think, with Jackson Powers Johnson, center out of Oregon, a very powerful guy, a good player. But I'm going to go a little bit different direction here because I think they can still get a center that can challenge for that starting job later in the draft. I'm saying, like you, I'm saying they're going to move back here. Probably 4 or 5 spots if possible. And take a player we haven't talked much about, but it's pretty intriguing. Kingsley Su'uma'otiu from BYU.
David, I am giving you all kinds of props for that pronunciation. Lord knows if it was right, but it sounded
was.
So
and don't ask me to do it again. I'm just calling him Big King. But, you know, this is a you had to do these comments, but I would say this is comparable to – Kingsley is a little bit comparable to some people feel they love his potential but don't feel he's polished or necessarily ready to go from day one. They think he may need a little time to adjust. The Cowboys took an offensive lineman like that just a couple of years ago in Tyler Smith. If you remember, Tyler Smith, while teams liked him, they thought he was certainly a high second-round pick, which is where Kingsley is up there, late first, high, you know, early second. Tyler Smith was in that same range. And when Dallas took him in the 20s, I think a lot of teams went, well, yeah, there's some potential there, but that's a little bit of reach. I don't know what he can do right away. And you've already seen him handle left tackle and left guard and actually play at a Pro Bowl level at left guard. So I think there are some similarities there just in the raw physical ability, how physical both players are. If you did that, that would also allow them to keep Tyler Smith at left guard, which I think they would prefer to do. That being said, it's less likely that a tackle is going to be there that they feel convinced about stepping in from day one as a starter. But I'm going to go with that. I'm going to go moving back a few spots and going with Su'uma'otiu.
He did it twice. Unbelievable. All right. I want to say this about that. One, when they're making a pick in the first or second round on an offensive lineman, I'm going to give the Cowboys the benefit of the doubt.
Yes. Would not give them the benefit of the doubt at defensive tackle, which we could talk about later when you see what they've done in their interior defensively. But on offensive line, the high picks, they have a very, very high hit rate of late.
They do. So if they like Kingsley, I'm just going to call him Kingsley or King. If they like him and they take him, then that's fine with me. I think they have done a good job at that. Let me ask you this, David. If they got a chance to take Graham Barton at center, would that mean they would come back in the second round and look for a tackle? Would a guy like Blake Fisher of Notre Dame be a possibility at that point? Or would they then say, okay, yeah, we're going to kick Tyler Smith over to left tackle?
It would. I don't have a good feel yet for how highly they have some of these second and third round offensive linemen rated. I do know they feel this is a very deep draft in the offensive line, and they're not alone in that. And they feel they can, you know, down the road, you could pick up another guy. But like I said, you know, tackle is a little more problematic, right? If you don't get a tackle in the first, the hit rate as far as them stepping in and what they can do right away is often goes down. Now, I say this knowing that Terrence Steele was an undrafted rookie free agent who, through injury, stepped in and has been a starter. So you do find that exception. But usually the deeper you go in the draft at tackle, the return on investments aren't that good. Whereas interior linemen, centers, and guards, you get more of that return a little bit. So, this is the problem we get into. When you have three of the first 87 picks and then go 87 selections without another one, you're kind of boxing yourself in, right?
Yeah.
You know, if that happened in the third round, Dallas is sitting there and going, okay, we really like this offensive lineman. We think he could start too. But look, we didn't take a running back in the second round. If we don't take a running back here, we're not going to be able to draft a guy who's going to step in and help us this year by waiting. So I think the Cowboys have handcuffed themselves a little bit to that position. They will say they're going best player, but all things being equal or close, positional need is going to tip the scales in certain discussions.
Yeah, I know we need to get to Evan's pick because he's chomping at the bit to make it. But I do want to add to that. Yeah, at the press conference when Mike McCarthy said that, we're just going to take the best player. And I just, you know, I thought, yeah, you should. That should be the position you're in. But I just don't see it. I think the positional needs here.
Positional need is always a tiebreaker. And usually it's when you're dealing in plateaus, it's not always clear cut, right? You can have one guy graded as a 7.23 and who's above a guy who is a 7.19. But you go, yeah, but we really need this position and we're not, you know, that's not that big of a difference. So let's go here.
Yeah. All right, Evan, here it comes. You're on the clock. What's your pick?
Well, I just want to say that I'm glad that we've stuck to the format in which it was going to be. Okay, I'm going to call on each of you guys. You're just going to give me your pick and the reason you're picking that guy, and then we'll move on to the next one.
Evan, don't be crotchety. Just make your stupid pick. We'll make fun of it, and then we'll move on.
My pick is going to be, I'm going to go with the optimist point of view and suggest that Barton will be there at 24. And if not, it wouldn't surprise me if the Cowboys tried to trade up to a couple spots to get him. But it looks like even in a deep offensive lineman class, there might be some separation after him and the next group. And so let's take the optimist point of view and say that for some reason he will last to 24. He won't go 18 to the Bengals. He'll stick around and the Cowboys will be able to grab him.
David, let me ask you this about Tyler Biadasz, the guy who Barton would be replacing if they indeed did draft him. Was he really all that good?
Well, he was a Pro Bowl player last year. He was the starter for 3 years and held up well. To answer your question, if he was really that good, he would still be here, right? If they considered him a part of the future, they considered him a very good player. They felt that this draft had centers that look to me, this is a little like asking if Biadasz is that good. It's a little bit like, I think we maintained on this podcast that Jake Ferguson in his first 2 years in the league was ahead of where Dalton Schultz was. Now, Dalton Schultz was a productive player for the Cowboys, but my point was always, look, but Ferguson, you know, he is shown more early, and there appears to be more of an upside there, so you can see him do it. And again, he did replace Schultz. They let Schultz walk, and Ferguson had an outstanding year this past year. I think the Cowboys looked at this draft class and went, you know what? Tyler Biadasz was a fourth-round pick. He started for us. He played very well. We believe that we can pick up a center in this draft who is actually more talented than what Tyler Biadasz was and just plug him in. Now, some of this is cost management, as Kevin, as you and I heard ad infinitum yesterday during the during our salary cap 101 session at the Star, which was supposed to be about the draft. But they felt, while a good player, they could replace him at the same or a higher performance level for less money in this draft.
Yeah, he's no Travis Frederick, I'll say that.
And Travis Frederick got a second contract. And that's what, you know, the Cowboys, that is, look, there are a lot of good players the Cowboys let go. But when you get to the second contract, that's when you're really making, a long-term investment that, that's a guy who is a core part of your future. He was a very good player. He helped them, but was he a core to what made this team successful? And they determined no, so they decided to go through the draft and try to replace that position.
All right.
Kevin, I just want to ask you a question.
We're moving to the second round.
I want to ask you a question before we get to the second round. Yeah. You went to the Star yesterday?
I did. What day was that? I can't.
He
even
put it in Google Maps, so he knew how to get there.
Tuesday. I was up all night writing my Mavs column, so I forgot what day it is.
Tuesday.
Yes, I did.
Yes,
but you went, and Jerry Jones was there, and I believe he said some words. And did you ask him what exactly was the context of "We're all in"? Did you ask him if that actually meant, "Yeah, I'm just"? It's Mike McCarthy's do or die. It's the staff's do or die. Or did you ask him if it meant he thought he could win this year?
Well, I didn't ask him anything, but I will say that I just listened and it was just a mess. Like David said, it was not. First of all, I'm sick of the all in argument and what that meant.
And he brought it up unsolicited again.
He
but
did.
Why are you sick of it?
He said it five
bringing
times.
It up. I mean, if he keeps bringing it up,
he was just jacking with us. He was just jacking with us at the presser. I mean, that's all he was doing.
He was trolling us, yes.
Yes. It was, you know, it's like David said, it was, you know, these things, and this is what I wrote, those pressers, they're meant to say as little as possible. And it's just like, okay, we're going to get our story out here again. We'll capture some attention, and we won't have to say anything to do it. Jerry, I mean, literally, David, when he started into that thing about it's not because we don't have money, I could not believe he actually said that out loud. Like, oh, Jerry, I didn't understand. I didn't know that's how the cap worked. I thought it was just you would just run out of money. It was like talking to Tom Hicks about when he said, I'm not bankrupt. It's my LLC that's bankrupt. You know, it's like, come on, Jerry. Please don't. And that's when Stephen interrupted him at that point.
And it was a 53-minute press conference, and Jerry Jones twice in the first 4 minutes said, "Now I'm not defensive here. I'm really not." But whenever a 53-minute press conference starts with two references unsolicited about how you're not defensive, you're defensive. More in a press conference, to me, it very quickly took on the tone of a congressional hearing where, you know, Jerry and Stephen were trying to make their points to a skeptical body about how they've conducted their offseason.
We're a very skeptical body. All right, here in the second round, when I'm on the clock, I'm going to tell you right up front, I'm looking for a linebacker here. There are two linebackers in my book that I would be fine with either one of these guys. My first choice would be Edgerrin Cooper from Texas A&M, who I don't think is going to be available when they pick. So I'm going to go once again in the second round. I'm going to take a page from the Cowboys book of drafting somebody with an injury history, and I'm going to go with Peyton Wilson of North Carolina State, a Luke Kuechly starter kit.
Yeah, Wilson. I believe he's actually up to double-digit in surgeries. Now, some of those are very minor in scopes, but double-digit surgeries, second-round pick, yeah, that kind of fits the profile of what the Cowboys have done through the years, especially at that position. Both of those guys, Since we can get some different names in here, I see either one of those being viable. You know, I think Junior Colson's kind of in that group as well. Colson and Edgerrin Cooper and Peyton Wilson. I think all three of those players, if they're on the board, or any one of them, sparks a discussion with the Cowboys as far as taking. Since you did linebacker, though, I think I'll swing over to running back and just do it on the stage. I think their optimum would be to get a running back with their third-round pick. They would feel that's how the board breaks and would give them the most value and allow them to dress other positions here. That being said, I believe that the run at running back is going to come ahead of when they pick at 87 in the third. So now you're sitting there, as we talked about, if you don't get a running back on the second day without a fourth and fifth round pick to the compensatory, you're not going to get a guy that you can plug into that you feel confident you can plug in and will be your lead running back this year in a rotation. So I'm going to go the other injured player area here at another position, and I'll go Jonathan Brooks with the second round pick, the UT running back, who their Dr. Cooper on the Cowboys staff performed his surgery, and who a former Cowboys running back, Tashard Choice, is his position coach at UT.
I was hoping you wouldn't say Jonathan Brooks, David. We're picking the medical tent here.
Right? Yes,
every guy we got is going to be under the blue hood here at some point. Jonathan Brooks is a terrific running back, but that was an ACL injury, and you know, we've seen what happens with the guys that are coming off an ACL injury, right? They're not quite the same. It usually takes them about another year to be back to form. I like the pick if the Cowboys didn't need him to start for them this year. I don't like it if that's going to be the case, though. I mean, maybe, you know, and like, you know, maybe they know more than we do about this. Obviously, you'd like to think they knew more than we do. But we'll see. I certainly see your scenario of them having to watch how that's going. If running back is starting to go, and it would be interesting to see where Brooks might go if that were the case, because he's considered, if he were healthy, certainly he would be the top.
He would be the best back, yeah. But again, you're talking about a back not being taken until the Cowboys are on the clock late second, and that's a very. And some people say that a running back won't be taken until the third round. I find that very hard to believe, but that is the talent plateau and how it's lining up.
All right. Evan, who's your second round pick?
Well, I'm going to take a page from the Cowboys history and say, let's change all that because of their dreadful second round results. And I am going to trade down. I have made a trade with the Arizona Cardinals thanks to my mock draft simulator, and picked up.
Wow, I love it when you get high tech on us.
Picks number 66 and 90 for the 56th pick and the 174th overall pick. So I have dropped down into the third round where I will have.
You will have two picks for us.
Three picks.
Ooh,
three picks in the third round.
This is AI Evan here. I like this.
Yeah. Of course, you traded up in the first round. What did you trade up?
I didn't trade up. I just said we're going to assume that Barton's there. Going to assume that Barton's there. You. Now it wouldn't. Okay. We'll leave it at that.
Okay. We'll leave it at that. All right. Very good. All right. Now we're into the third round. We're getting close to using up all the time we have on our own clock for the Cowboys segment. In the third round, I'm going to go with the guy that I've already campaigned for. This is my guy, Wisconsin's Braylon Allen. He goes about 245, scored, I'm not sure how many touchdowns he scored at Wisconsin, but it was a lot. Here's my thinking about running backs. If your offensive line is a little leaky, then you need a running back who can make his own holes. And that's what Braylon Allen does. David, did you notice on the walk-off with Stephen Jones whenever that was, Tuesday, did you notice that when he talked about the running back they signed, of course, he said we like a big running back. He just kind of threw that in at the end. And, you know, he didn't have a big running back last year.
No. And they had red zone issues and for their play action. Look at who they have. A power back, a north-south runner, makes more sense for them in this draft than another type of back. So I agree with you completely. They like Braylon Allen a lot. He was one of their 30 visits. To me, the only question is he going to be there when they're on the clock late in the third? But he's definitely he's not going to get out of the third round.
No question about that. David, what's your third round pick?
Well, the way we did this, I think I will switch over and I will go linebacker here since I made a little bit of a leap of faith there in the second with Jonathan Brooks. He's not as good as the linebackers we talked about, Colson Cooper, Peyton Wilson, but Trevin Wallace, Kentucky linebacker. He was one player who came in on the 30 visits. You know, this is instructive too. If you want to break it down on their 30 visits, the most players at any position they brought in were offensive line, 7. Now there are 3 different spots in the offensive line, right? But they brought in 7 offensive linemen in their 30 visits for an extended session with 6 running backs and 6 linebackers.
Really?
Nothing else. No other position's close. No other position had more than 2. So that tells you, gives you a pretty good indication of their thinking and what they feel they need to come out of this draft with positionally. So, yeah, I'll go with Trevin Wallace in the third round.
All right. Evan, since you've got 19 picks in the third round, we need to get going. Let's go.
All right. So it's 66. I am going to grab, I'm going to grab the receiver, Troy Franklin from Oregon. Good downfield speed. I think that the Cowboys could use a third receiver, right? They've got they let Gallup go. They're a little bit thin there, yes or no?
Sure,
yeah, they're a little thin there.
Yeah, they'll come out with a stretch everywhere. With the receiver.
They're a little thin everywhere.
Yes, this is true.
But I'm going to go with Franklin there, and then we get to 87. And I like the running back idea. I'm not going to go with the big running back, though. I'm going to go with the solid running back. I'm going to assume that Blake Corum will be there.
Blake Corum pick.
His little low center of gravity, and I like it.
Very productive
David,
player.
I don't know what the Cowboys think of him. Evan hates it when I make comparisons. I think fans like comparisons. Could he be a little bit of an Emmitt Smith starter kid? Is that a little bit in the DNA there?
Well, that's the whole nothing really pops about him, right? He's not like an overpowering north-south runner, but he's not. There's more to his game than north-south. He doesn't have the great speed, the great burst. Just a very effective, productive back on a good team for a long time. So, yeah, he's one of those guys we're talking about in the third round. All those guys, Braylon Allen, Corum, Troy Benson, Bucky Irving, all of those guys are in there and in the discussion.
All right. And, Evan, your last pick?
My last of my trio of third-round picks, I will try to do what you guys do and go for a – formerly injured player. What if Mason Smith, the defensive tackle from LSU, is still sitting around?
I don't remember watching Mason Smith.
He didn't play much in 2023 player. Or in 2022. Right?
Well, you know, one of my considerations was Tavondre Sweat. I've already talked about him and how much I like him, and he certainly should be a guy to consider in the third round. I don't know how much his stock has fallen because of the DUI charges, so we'll see what happens there. But that's certainly a guy that you could consider a defensive lineman, especially if you're getting multiple picks in the third round. All right, that's going to do it for our mock draft. We need to get out of this thing and get to some other stuff. We will find out how we did next week and when we talk about the draft. We got a few things going in our little potpourri segment. First of all, the Mavericks did square up the series. They came out Tuesday night not looking anything like they did Sunday in a miserable first half of a terrible loss to the Clippers at Crypto.com Arena. They were much tougher in this game. They did not allow Zubats to get positioned down in the low post like they did in the first game. They made the Clippers work hard for everything that they did. It completely took them out of their game. To see the difference in the look on the Clippers' faces in game one to game two, everywhere, not just when they were in the lane, but, you know, they made 50% of their threes in game one. In game two, I think they were 4 of 21. It was a remarkable turnaround defensively for the Mavericks, which was really good because offensively they weren't very good. They picked it up in the second half like Luka Doncic usually does and like Kyrie Irving usually does. But they struggled in a lot of different places. I thought the thing that really impressed me, David, was that how P.J. Washington played. He was a factor offensively, certainly in that 14-0 run in which they went from six down to eight up. And he was also a large part of that defensive effort in the first half when Kawhi Leonard, who made his comeback to this series after being out for 3 weeks, I thought that the first half had less to do with him being a little timid than the fact that PJ was always in his face.
Yeah, I thought he was outstanding. Very confident in the second half, getting to his spots in the corner. Didn't hesitate on the three-pointer. Luka and Kyrie both were looking for him, had a lot of confidence in him. You know, we've talked about the need for a who one and two are. The need for a consistent third player to come up that you can count on game in and game out. Washington's given them that. I thought he did that yesterday, and he's done that more often than not here in the stretch. So he seems to be emerging for them as a very valuable piece. Again, physical, good defender. I will say I thought – here's the other thing. We talk about – they had an outstanding game defensively. They weren't that good offensively. Well, if you have two great players, even if you're not hitting offensively and you keep the game close with your defense, great players will win games for you. And that's what Luka especially did in the fourth quarter. It was close because big players rise to the occasion, right? We've seen Luka do it. We've seen Kyrie Irving do it. Both of them did that at spots on the road in a difficult game. The other thing I will say is, I didn't think that – I thought Kawhi's return disrupted their chemistry a bit. He'd been out for a while. It didn't appear to me that George and Harden and Westbrook were as assertive. Take George out of that, but really more Westbrook and Harden were assertive and decisive offensively with Kawhi back. I think they were kind of – deferring to him a little bit and letting him get his legs under him. I think that'll be different for the Clippers going forward.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. I think this will be interesting to see how the Clippers respond now. I would think that Kawhi Leonard, he did look better in the second half. I thought he looked a little more out there, kind of fit in the flow of what they were trying to do as they made a comeback there. But the Mavericks still got their stops in the second half as well. And they played better offensively. So I would expect you would think at home that the offense will click a little more. And if they could come close to playing that same kind of defense, I do feel comfortable now that the Mavericks have stolen the home court advantage.
Yeah, Lively had a good game, I thought. Gafford still hadn't shown what we've seen here in the stretch run in these two games. But Lively, a very good game last night. And again, these two teams are very close. Very, very close. But Dallas is younger and a little more athletic, and we'll see if that can work to their favor over the course of the series.
Yeah, that's my takeaway too. Younger, more athletic. All right. The Stars are down 0-1 in their Stanley Cup chase here against the Vegas Golden Knights. This is a little bit of the same thing that bit them in the butt last year. Jake Oettinger is not playing well. He gave up four goals right away and put the Stars in a big hole. And they kind of fought back, and he kind of tightened up after that. But he didn't see a lot of shots. Kind of remarkable that they only had 15 shots on goal.
Yeah, to be such a dominant player at times, he's a little inconsistent for as good of a player as he is.
That really hurt him last year in the playoffs. He had some poor games. And so we'll see if he can bounce back. They're going to have it. They did a good job of keeping the Knights from taking a lot of shots on goal. But as we learned from Tim Kalishaw's fine coverage, one of the problems with goalies is that they like to see some shots so they can get kind of settled in a little bit. And he didn't see enough, and bang, 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 and next thing you know, it's four. So we'll see how they bounce back. I was going to say I thought the Stars' chances in the playoff were a deep run were probably better than the Mavs. I'm not so sure now after watching that first game.
Yeah,
so
they need to take the second game and go back with a split to Vegas.
Oh, absolutely. No question about that. You got to split the at home ice. You've got to split those first two games. All right, let's move over real quick. We also saw Scottie Scheffler had won the week after the Masters. I think, David, you have a stat on that. What is that stat?
I believe I saw the other day. I think it's the first time in 85 years that the golfer who won the Masters has come back with a victory in this next tournament that next week. So he is, like we said, he's – people forget how dominant Jordan Spieth was for a very short period because I think they focus on the way he flamed out in the Masters and what has happened to his career since. But Scheffler has gone just beyond that. This is the most dominant stretch we've seen since Tiger Woods.
Yeah, there's no question about that. You know, and who would have thought of the guy with that kind of footwork? Yeah. He's such a great ball striker, and you would think with the way he moves around on his shots, that wouldn't be the case. If he's putting well, he's almost unbeatable.
You would not use him as an instruction tape on the setup and the swing for what.
Yeah, kids, don't do this. There's no question about that. All right, that's going to do it for our podcast this week. We are glad that you dropped in and got our mock draft and talked about the Rangers' problems and where the Stars and Mavericks are heading, maybe in different directions. We'll have a lot better idea next week when we come back to talk about these things, certainly about the draft and maybe about where these teams are in the playoffs and if the Rangers can ever start hitting again. So from everybody in here to everybody out there, thanks, and we'll see you next time.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.